The number of people infected with Ebola was reported this week to be more than 2,200, and more than 1,200 have died from it. But that death toll may be misleading, since Ebola is now eroding the capacity of the whole healthcare system in Liberia, and more are dying without being infected with Ebola. Today on Health Styles, we're going to talk about the capacity of West African countries who are dealing with Ebola, their capacity in terms of healthcare delivery, and how Ebola is undermining that capacity. And I'm really pleased to be talking today with three nurses, two of whom are from the U.S., the other of whom is from Liberia, to talk with us today about what is going on in terms of capacity in Liberia. Let me start by introducing Dr. Magdalene Agard. She's a nurse educator who has been teaching nursing and public health in the U.S. and abroad for the past 10 years. She has volunteered in Liberia since 2012 as one of the faculty for the Master's in Nursing Education program at Mother Pattern College in Monrovia. Magdalene, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Diana.
And Mother Pattern College in Monrovia has been around for how long?
It's a good question. I don't know. Many years.
Many years. And so you've been going there since 2012. And you were last there when?
I returned back to the U.S. in June after being there for 5 weeks.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Dorcas Kunkel is an assistant clinical professor at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing. She is also an advanced public health nurse and has volunteered as a nurse faculty in the Master of Science in Nursing Education program, graduate program at Mother Pattern College of Health Sciences in Monrovia, since that program's beginnings in 2011. Thank you so much for joining us, Dorcas.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you just returned when?
I returned on July the 21st.
Okay. And finally, I'm very pleased to have with us Harriet Dolo, who is a certified midwife, registered nurse, and fellow of the West African College of Nursing. She is the director of the Esther Bacon School of Nursing and Midwifery in Curran Lutheran Hospital in Zorzor, Lofa County, Liberia. Lofa County has been the most heaviest hit county in Liberia with Ebola. Harriet has been educating nurses and midwives in Liberia for the past 7 years. Her main goal is to develop and improve the quality of healthcare delivery services through quality, evidence-based teaching to nursing and midwifery students in rural, poor communities in Liberia. Harriet, we're very pleased to have you with us today on Health Styles.
Thank you.
And Harriet, you have been living there for how long? All of your life?
Of my life.
You were born there.
Yes.
Well, we're going to hear more about your story in a moment, but I wanted to start with Dr. Magdalene Agard. Magdalene, tell us about your recent visit to Liberia, when it was, and what you witnessed in terms of Ebola.
Thank you, Diana. I was in Liberia from May to June of this year, teaching in the master's program at Mother Pattern College. And I was teaching a course in leadership and management, which was very timely considering what was going on within the country at the time. The first cases of Ebola had been reported about 2 to 3 months prior to my arriving in the country, and at that time we're just in Lofa County. And while I was teaching at Mother Pattern, we had the first cases of Ebola being reported in Monrovia. And so part of the leadership and education course was to look at how do we address public health crises? How do nurses look at this type of situation happening within their own country? And as nurse leaders, what is their role in being able to address that? So it was a timely course for them to have, and difficult subject matter for us to be addressing in the course at the time, but something that I felt was really important for their learning as graduate nurses. Mm.
And were they fearful of Ebola? Were they expressing concerns about working with patients or in facilities where there were a number of Ebola patients, or it wasn't a concern yet?
It was certainly starting to be a concern. For the students that we have, because they were not in the hospitals at the time, there was less of a concern for them personally, but of course they're concerned about all their colleagues and families and other students of theirs at their schools who would be caring for those patients.
Thank you. Now, Dr. Dorcas Kunkel, you followed Magdalene Agard to Liberia to teach in that program, correct?
That's correct.
And so tell us about when you were there and what your experience was, what was happening with Ebola at that point and what you saw.
All right. I just would like to say that I was a child of missionaries in Liberia, so I have a history, a long history memories there from 1964 to 1972, and then again I started to go back to Liberia in 2010 and have been returning yearly since then. And this time I followed Magdalene in the program and arrived in Liberia on June the 13th. And at that time there had been no new reported case of Ebola for 42 days, so people were thinking that the Ebola outbreak might have passed.
So
I had two courses to teach in the program, and 5 weeks to teach them. And I teach monitoring and evaluation of teaching and learning in nursing and the curriculum development in nursing courses. And as faculty, we stay in a house across from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which is very close to where the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is where the president does her work each day.
Uh-huh.
We travel with a driver from that area over to the School of Nursing to teach each day and then returned with the driver, who, by the way, lives in West Point. We may address that a little bit again later.
Okay.
And as the Ebola cases began to rise in the communities, they started to get a little bit alarmed, and the staff at the School of Nursing began to be a little bit alarmed. Staff set out hand-washing stations at the entries and exits to the compound, to the classrooms and bathrooms, and these were large buckets with spouts on them so that you could pour soapy bleach water over your hands and dry your hands with paper towels. And they required everyone who was entering or exiting the compound to use these hand-washing stations, and began to place posters around the school and deliver them to staff to place in their communities. And then over the radio, the local radio stations, public service announcements began to appear, and the development of several songs in the vernacular Liberian English with Ebola is real.
Yeah.
And they were delivered over the radio, and also text messages began to appear on my cell phone, and these were produced by the Ministry of Health.
Text messages such as?
Ebola is real, and it's very, very short and clear messages because of the level of the English usage in the country.
Uh-huh. And let me just point out, we have been talking on Health Styles and on WBAI about some of the facts about Ebola, and the fact that if somebody has been exposed to the virus, they're not really contagious until they become very ill, and then it must be contact with bodily fluids. So, and that the virus is easily killed by things like bleach and hand washing, soap, etc. So it sounds like that the precautions you were taking were exactly the right ones to do at that time.
That's correct. The students that we have 15 graduate students, all senior nurses in the country, did express concern about the travel in taxi cabs because they live in the outlying towns and villages and suburbs of Monrovia, and they have about an hour's travel in crowded taxi cabs to come into the classroom.
Mm.
And they were very concerned about sweating in the taxi cab and how that might transmit the virus to them. It worried them quite a bit.
Uh-huh. And sweat is considered to be one of the body fluids to be careful about, correct?
That's correct.
Yes. Well, so let me turn to Harriet Dolo. You are a native Liberian, and you talk to us about what your experience has been in Ebola. Now, you are in the United States. You came here when?
I came on a 7th of
7th of August. So it's gotten even worse since you left. But what were things like? What was your experience with Ebola before you left?
Well, I'm from the part of Liberia that the Ebola hits very high. That is the northern part of Liberia in Lofa County. Mm-hmm. And the issue of Ebola in Liberia, in that part of the country, was so very strange to the health workers and citizens. Health workers, meaning nurses and midwives, they were not prepared to combat Ebola because they never had the personal material and equipment they needed to work. And then citizens did not believe that this virus exists. And so the citizens thought the issue of Ebola was just a myth, and that the health workers was refusing, because health workers in Lofa County, where I come from, they were afraid to go to work with fear that they could contact the Ebola and die and leave their families. And so most of the health center and facility were abandoned. And then patients were home seeking their own traditional attention for care. And so on a daily basis in Lofa, where I come from, people were dying. And then we were forced to shut down our activities at the school because our students were going into the clinic, into the health facility to care for patients. And the school also did not have some of the PPE and other
the personal protection equipment
supplies to prevent our students.
So my understanding is even being able to have access to gloves is often an issue.
It is. Yeah. It is, the gloves, the gowns, the masks, the goggles, it is an issue. So really, we were not ready prepared, and we are not still equipped to fight Ebola.
So I want to point out that I believe it was yesterday, sometime this week, Jenna Moore posted a report. She's in Moravia, and she posted two reports on BuzzFeed. In which she pointed out that at this point the estimates are that 75% of the people who have died are women, and that that's because the traditional sort of informal caregiving is usually given by women, women in the home, the wife, the mother, and they have no protective equipment. And the other, of course, being nurses, that Liberia depends heavily on its nurses, and the workload, even before Ebola hit, the workload for nurses was very high. The pay is not that great. And the availability of adequate supplies has been an issue. So here we have people who are the mainstay caregivers in a country who are now getting sick themselves because they are caregivers and caring for very ill people. And in some cases being told, don't touch, don't care, or they're saying, I'm not going to touch or I'm not going to care. So this is a really difficult issue, isn't it? How did I characterize, Harriet, did I characterize what nurses confronted before Ebola correctly?
Yes. All right.
And you have been dedicated to trying to improve the knowledge of nurses, the status of nurses, the preparation of nurses, but still face challenges in terms of, you know, a country that doesn't have a lot of resources, correct?
Very correct.
So,
this is excellent. I would add, as an American coming into that environment, that one of the things that American nurses take for granted is the gloves, the supplies, the protective equipment that isn't as available in Liberia. And so it's something that is so unfamiliar to us to enter this type of an environment where the things that we have available every day simply are not there to help to protect the nursing workforce.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit more about that in a moment, but maybe you could tell me, and probably, Harriet, you would have this information, but maybe Dorcas or Magdalene, you have it. Before Ebola hit, what would the nurse-patient ratio be on a hospital ward on average? how many patients would a nurse be responsible for?
Harriet, you could speak to that, perhaps. It's hard to say because the facilities, there's very little standardization between facilities.
Yeah. And like you said, even before the outbreak of Ebola, the issue of the increase in health workforce is a problem in the country. So when it comes to the ratio of patient and student, that has always been total nurse. I'm sorry, that has always been high. In some instance, you have one nurse to 25, close to 30 patients.
Now, let's emphasize this. Before Ebola hit, there would be one nurse to 25 or 30 patients.
Correct.
In the United States, I just had a conversation with a nurse who has on a medical surgical floor. She has four patients. She was very distressed because her hospital was going to increase the load to five. Now, you can argue that the roles are very different in these two countries, and part of it is because of advanced knowledge, but also because of technology. But I think many American nurses would be so overwhelmed by 1 to 25 or 1 to 30 ratio that they, I'm not sure what they would do.
Diana, this is Dorcas. I want to say that also in most healthcare settings, there is not a regular source of electricity, and there may also not be running water.
No running water.
Caring for these people without electricity and without running water, the water is carried most of the time by bucket.
And the water is obtained from?
A well.
A well. So this is even more challenging than we thought. No running water, and yet Ebola is characterized by body fluids coming out everywhere. And so it seems like it would be almost impossible to contain this virus in a Liberian facility. Would you agree with that, Harriet?
Well, it is difficult for now, but with education, especially creating the awareness, we can fight Ebola.
So how, talk to me a little bit about what you would do to enhance how the fight is going on Ebola.
Say that again.
So what would you do if your president, Evelyn Johnson Sirleaf, came to you and said, Harriet Dolow, how can we improve our ability to contain Ebola right now? How would you advise?
Well, we first have to take the great courage to fight Ebola. But we do need to provide our health workers with the PPEs,
the protective
infection
personal protective
control supplies. Mm-hmm. We do need logistics. We do need to give some health risks benefit to our health workers, and we do need to create a lot of awareness, especially in our local languages in the country, that Ebola is real. And we still need to technically train, increase the capacity of the nurses and health workforce.
How likely is it that you're going to increase the numbers? I would think that anybody who was thinking about nursing might be very frightened to enter it now, and I would think that might be the same with medicine.
All right. So what I need to do right now is to create, like you just said, those who had the vision to enter nursing profession, with the report of nurses dying on a daily basis, they will be afraid, want to divert to another profession. So we need to motivate, create the atmosphere, create training opportunities, provide scholarships, to want to motivate people to enter into the profession.
And Dorcas and Magdalene, you're trying to support that effort.
That is correct.
We are, and I think Dorcas and I both see areas where the capacity building within the country, exclusive of graduate education, which is extremely important, and we can talk more about, but just looking at the basic nursing education, as Harriet was talking about, one of the things that really could be emphasized more within the curriculum is public health. that isn't as strong a focus, partially because the country has really looked towards decreasing infant and maternal mortality during childbirth and at other times during the first 5 years of a child's life, which is important in any developing country, particularly when you're trying to recover from war and rebuild the population. And at this point, public health education is really what's needed for the nurses to help combat this outbreak and to, as Harriet said, get that continuing education about how to prevent the spread of communicable and infectious diseases such as Ebola.
So Harriet Dolo, I mean, that's a very good point, Magdalene, and I wonder, Harriet, if you could tell us a little bit about what the current public health structure is and if there are public health nurses out in communities even before Ebola that could be relied upon to help to educate the population about how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
No, that is one of our major challenges, and I do agree with both of them that we need to keenly look at our curriculum to include something about public health. That is lacking. It's mixing completely all of the curriculum.
So the approach, recent approach to trying to contain Ebola has been imposing a curfew in certainly in Monrovia and quarantining people. What information do you have on how that is going? And Harriet, I'm not sure, I assume you're in touch with people regularly in Liberia while you're here in the United States. Is that true?
Well, I do talk with my family on a daily basis.
Do you fear for them?
Oh, yes.
Tell us about your family and why they may be exposed to Ebola.
Well, my family, they live currently, I have some of them in Monrovia and others in other parts of Liberia. And in Lofa, I do have two of my brothers that are there. Those also is very safe for now. But in Monrovia, the issue of getting into taxi, moving from one point to another, is also a means of being exposed.
Currently, taxis are limited to having only three passengers, and so that they're not in direct contact with each other in the taxi. But previously, there would be just as many as could fit.
And is there any sense that taxi drivers are abiding by this change?
Yep. They do, and then also have to increase the charges.
And Harriet, your family, are they worried?
Well, everyone in Liberia is worried about Ebola, so to some extent, yes. But they do also take some universal precautions, preventive measures, like the washing hand station. They have that place at the front and the back of the house. And so, to some extent, they are worried, like any other person who is in Liberia.
So, one of the issues has become that there are nurses, and I don't know if you know of any nurses who have left the hospitals. In some cases, hospitals have been shut down. I think, in fact, I want to say it was Curran Hospital, one of the ones that was shut down for a minute?
No.
There, you're correct, Diana. This is Magdalene. There have been several hospitals in the country that have been shut down. And I've worked with a local nonprofit group, Global Health Ministries, which has been supporting the Ministry of Health and Curran and Phoebe Lutheran Hospitals in Liberia by air freighting protective equipment over there for distribution. And Phoebe Hospital was closed. Their doctor in charge did contract Ebola. And many of their nursing staff were not feeling well, but were not confirmed Ebola cases, and had decided to stay home from work. And so they did close the hospital. It was closed for just over 2 weeks. They started disinfecting the hospital, went through the entire entire hospital to disinfect it, and have just now reopened and people are starting to come back to work, which has been a challenge, of course, because of the lack of the healthcare workforce. So even though the hospital is now reopened, it's challenging because having the doctor in charge who is still ill and now is starting to feel well enough to come back to work, some of the nursing staff is feeling well enough, but you already were lacking enough staff before Ebola hit.
Yes.
And now with Ebola, it's really been challenging because you do not have enough nurses and physicians to care for the patients who are there.
It's very interesting that some of them are surviving, and I mean, we know the death rate is 50% or higher. And recently, this week, there's some reports that ZMapp, the medication that the American doctor or nurse received and is now has been given to a couple people in Liberia, seems to be helping. So that, I guess, is promising news. But it's also very disturbing when you talk of people who don't really understand the illness, or when it's just so overwhelming in a community that fear abounds. And there have been reports of attacks on hospitals, thinking that the hospitals are actually causing the Ebola and causing the deaths. Harriet, have you heard of these attacks, and do you know what impact they have on the healthcare workers there?
Oh, yes, I do. Well, let me start first with the attacks. Like I said, initially, people of Liberia, the citizens, really did not believe the existence of Ebola. So there were too many myths. They felt that the health workers were spraying patients to die. They felt that the health workers were injecting people to die. They felt that patients that were taken to the hospital were being abandoned. So with all of those myths, they went on attacking hospitals and in some communities, attacking health workers. And this has caused a lot of problems in the health system because nurses or health workers are afraid. No one wants to die at the front line in saving another person's life. Mm. And so some nurses stay away from job. Families are worried if you are a nurse and you are the breadwinner, you are the one who finds food and place on the table for your family. Your family won't want you to die. So nurses started abandoning hospital and other health facilities because of the reaction of the citizen, the way how the citizen saw Ebola to be. And at first, the citizen also saw Ebola to be like the government wanted to solicit some funding from international communities. So they did not take the Ebola to be of reality.
But people are dying. And maybe the texting of Ebola is real is having some impact. I want to share, though, I mentioned earlier that it was Jenna Moore on BuzzFeed yesterday posted two stories, and one of which was just heartbreaking. It was talking about Dr. Samuel Brisbane.
Yes.
Who, yes. Now, do you know him? Did you know him?
I know of him.
And Harriet, did you know Samuel Brisbane?
I did hear of him and saw his picture.
So he was considered one of Liberia's top physicians, and he was taking care of people with Ebola, and it was actually from a patient who he didn't think had Ebola, who went into a cardiac arrest, and he resuscitated him without protective equipment because he didn't think he had Ebola, but the man did. And so Dr. Samuel Brisbane, became infected and died. And there in this report by Jenna Moore, she quotes Dr. Vani Scott McDonald, the general administrator and CEO at the John F. Kennedy Memorial Hospital in Monrovia, where Samuel Brisbane worked. And she said, "When we went to bury Dr. Brisbane, we were all frightened. We couldn't even comfort one another because they were afraid of, they were not supposed to touch each other. You didn't know who had been exposed, etc. And she says, to care is to comfort, to console. Ebola has taken away our comfort. It has taken away our humanity. So I guess this is the other issue that people aren't really talking about is, yes, you know, it's wreaking havoc on the healthcare system, but underlying that is this sense that is it wreaking havoc on the people's humanity with not much choice. The fact that you before wanted to hold your husband as he was dying, but now you can't touch him. Or a nurse might have held the hand of a patient who was dying, and now you can't do that. I'd be interested in your thoughts about whether Ebola is different than many other diseases that we've seen in that it really could take a toll on our very humanity.
It's true. This is Dorcas. It is a common cultural practice in Liberia for families to wash and respectfully clean their deceased loved ones. And there is a higher death rate in Liberia due to many other causes as well. So there are many deaths. And when the deceased is laid to rest, small gifts go with that person. Mm-hmm. Correct,
yeah.
Harriet?
Correct.
And they're dressed in beautiful clothing,
mm-hmm.
and they're wrapped in cloth that's caring. It's all caring procedures. And they can't do that right now.
Mm.
And I think it must just be heartbreaking.
Yeah. Jenna Moore goes on to say, Ebola relies on our weakness for compassion and comfort to survive as it successfully moves from one grief-stricken host to the next. It erodes another invisible bond between Liberians, trust. So, Harriet, it's really quite painful to think about. It's one thing for people to die. It's another thing for a people, a community, to be transformed in the way it thinks about community, thinks about its fellow person because of this disease.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you have concerns about this?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Like you initially said, Ebola is like Lassa fever. They have similar signs and symptoms. Bodies are treated almost the same, where family and loved ones can take charge. And Ebola is like stigmatizing to some extent right now. So it is a serious concern in our rural communities in Liberia.
Mm-hmm. I guess you can also ask the question, though, of where is our own humanity? There was a report that Dr. Joanne Liu, who is the president of Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, really called called for more relief efforts and really called out the United States and other countries, developed countries, for not doing enough to help countries to respond to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. She called it a complete disaster and said that agencies like the World Health Organization, the CDC, and other aid groups need to become more involved in prevention and surveillance, including tracing the contacts of people who are sick. We know that if this happened in the United States, the CDC would be all over this in terms of tracking contacts. And yet, as we've talked about, Liberia has limited capacity in terms of an infrastructure for doing this kind of public health work. And so she is really calling for a much more ramped up response, and clearly just the protective equipment is something that it seems like if we focused on trying to get better protective equipment to Liberia, that would certainly help healthcare workers to feel more comfortable staying in the work, staying on the job, although some who have been totally suited up had some breaches and were exposed. But Jenna Moore, again from BuzzFeed's, reports on a nurse who was on the maternity ward of a larger clinic. And of course, people are just not going to hospitals for births, according to her, because they are afraid of actually acquiring the Ebola virus there. And Jenna Moore reports, Tarpa, the nurse, is wearing the kit she says the health ministry issued her as Ebola protection, a thin plastic blue poncho and rubber gloves. She's tied a rubber band around the rubber gloves, an ad hoc seal between her wrists and arms. She wears her own pink scrubs and rubber loafers that leave her ankles and the tops of her feet exposed. She has wrapped her head in a shower cap. It's sort of frightening to think that this is what nurses are being asked to use to protect themselves from the Ebola virus. Do any of you know of additional efforts to get protective equipment to the healthcare workers, including nurses in Liberia?
Diana, this is Magdalene. Two responses. Yes, I am well aware of many efforts going on, but here in Minneapolis, Global Health Ministries has worked with the Liberian Nurses Association and Friends of Liberia and some other donors within the area. They air freighted a shipment of protective equipment that was purchased locally, so very good equipment, to the Ministry of Health, which was distributed. They have freighted another shipment, which is ready to, will be probably entering port at the end of September, and another shipment is now being packed in a container to be freighted over as well. But if you look at the Ministry of Health, their most recent report out of Liberia, they have started keeping track of the inventory that they have in the warehouse of all of the different types of gloves, rubber boots, protective equipment of different kinds, surgical gloves and gowns that they are having in the warehouse, and the gap that exists. And looking at the coverall disposable personal protective equipment that they have, they are lacking currently 182,683 pieces of equipment.
Wow.
Rubber boots, they're lacking 1,250 pairs of rubber boots. And I could go on and on. They have a significant inventory that they are now listing with the hope that people will hear the message and will look at how they can assist them in getting the supplies that are needed. They have developed a good system of dispersing the supplies, which was one of the concerns to begin with. And the Minister of Health, Dr. Gwenegali, has been working very hard with his staff, including some of the nurses who have graduated from our program, to be sure that the equipment is getting out there, along with education for the nurses about prevention. And I'll let Dorcas speak to the work that's been going on there in terms of surveillance and tracking that they've been doing as well.
Well, this is Dorcas. I would say that the surveillance system really in the country is essentially non-existent at this time. And as Harriet mentioned before, nurses do not receive strong education in this area of practice and public health. The surveillance system has no, most hospitals have no standardized health records. There's no systematic collection of data or those trained in analysis and tracking and trending of information. And there are no systematic patient identifiers. There are little data about nursing care or interventions given to patients that is recorded. There's really essentially no privacy and confidentiality of records. And in all but the rare and most elite clinics, all records are paper if they're kept at all. And because of the cost of binders, many records are kept loose in manila folders, so they get mixed up or lost. And Liberia, of course, is a very hot and humid climate, and records, paper records like these do not store well, so they're not available then for tracking and trending of information. The other thing about surveillance that's really important for outsiders or people who come into the country to understand is there are really no addresses in Liberia. Yeah. There really are no addresses at all. You'd have to understand the pattern of how people live in communities and villages. And in order to understand that, you really have to spend some time there. Villages are divided up into quarters, and that does not necessarily mean four quarters. It may mean, quarters means family groupings, kind of. Harriet, you might want to expound on this in a minute. And in those family groupings, you're going to be looking for heads of households. And there's still polygamy practiced in the country, and it is illegal polygamy. And so there may be a more than one head. One head of household may have more than one household that they are managing. And it's really hard for those of us who come in from a Western point of view to understand that pattern of living and how to track and trend. And again, Liberia's culture is collective. It's a collective culture, and the family rules supreme there, as opposed to here in the United States where the individual is really the most valued.
Yes.
Characteristic. And I'll let you take that from there, Harriet, if you have anything to add.
Yeah. Okay, Harriet, on the line. So in addition to DACA, Liberia is a family-based thing when it comes to decision-making as compared to the U.S., maybe based on the individual basis. And so the issue of tracing of other contacts makes it difficult in line with no addresses. Houses are not being numbered. Villages are divided into so many quarters. And the decision-making maker in that family is not available at the time the health workers get there. And so it creates a lot of problem when it comes to getting data.
So there are huge infrastructure issues here that would make true public health efforts as we know them in the United States almost impossible and would need to be addressed. And I appreciate that all of you are committed to trying to prepare a healthcare workforce to be able to do the public health work that is needed to prevent the spread of diseases like Ebola and to promote the health of this population. I think it's a huge challenge, and I appreciate the efforts that each of you bring to this. We're almost out of time, but I have one last question, and I will, if you have, you mentioned, I have two last questions. Magdalene, you, Agard, you mentioned that Global Health Ministry is working on providing the protective equipment and certainly needs support. Is if people want to provide some kind of support, financial support, how can they do so?
Global Health Ministries, they can Google it. I don't have the address off the top of my head. I think it's something like 7831 Hickory Avenue in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
But Google Global Health Ministry.
Yes, Global Health Ministries.
Ministries, okay.
Yes. And the donations currently would be most welcome as they're currently packing another container to ship over there.
Great. And financial donations or equipment
financial
donations?
Financial donations. If you have protective equipment, if you're a company that would like to donate that would be
great.
Wonderful. But financial donations are the best because we can get bulk prices on the equipment.
Great. And are there any other organizations that you would like listeners to know about that are supporting what's going on in Liberia and could use help?
I'm sure there are other organizations. That's the only one that we're really aware
Great.
Of. The Liberian Nurses Association here has been instrumental in assisting us with these efforts, but the donations are all currently going through Global Health Ministries, which I think is really one of the a larger organizations in the country because we do have a very strong Liberian population here who has really helped with this effort.
So one last question. So this morning I did a brief 5 minutes on what we're talking about today on WBAI's morning show with Michael Haskins. And he asked me, he said, you know, we have listeners whose families are in Liberia. And what would you say to them about traveling to Liberia right now? And I said I wasn't sure. It seemed to me that, one, you'd want to be careful about traveling to Liberia because of the outbreak of Ebola. But if you felt like you had to be there because you were concerned about your family, that you would want to make sure that you took some protections with you, but also should think about that the country is in a crisis right now. And would you be helping with that crisis, or would you be adding to the burden? So I'd be interested in any closing thoughts you have about this issue. If there are people in the United States who think, I need to go to Liberia because I have family there, I want to go to help, how would you advise them? Let me start with Dr. Doris Kunkel, Assistant Clinical Professor at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing. Dorcas, what would you say?
Well, that is a very challenging question. I would ask them to refrain from visiting the country at this time because the country's already burdened with the response to Ebola, and any health care facilities that are open will not be able to deliver care in the way that we are accustomed to it here in the United States.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And Dr. Magdalene Agard, a nurse educator who has been teaching nursing and public health in the U.S. and abroad for the past 10 years and volunteers as faculty for the Master's in Nursing Education program at Mother Pattern College in Monrovia. What are your thoughts on that?
I would agree with what Dorcas said. I think that if you are able to assist in the effort to combat Ebola, if you have public health experience, surveillance experience, healthcare experience of any kind, emergency medical support, having you there if you can contribute to the effort is wonderful, and more people are sorely needed to help them out. But people who are concerned or are not in a position to be able to help combat the effort, I would encourage them to refrain from going as well, and to try and support the people that they know from here with their thoughts, their donations, their ability to do what they can from afar.
Thank you, Dr. Madeline Agard. And finally, Harriet Dolo, certified midwife, registered nurse, and director of the Esther Bacon School of Nursing and Midwifery in Zorzor, Lofa County, Liberia. First, Harriet, thank you so much for joining us today on Health Styles. Tell us your thoughts about this question.
Well, I want to say thank you for having me on this health talk, and I want to add to the both speakers, Tuckers and Madeline, to say if there is anyone in the area of special of public health or higher other specialty that can help Liberians to fight this Ebola, we encourage you to come. If anyone can help in any little way through the Global Health Ministries or whatever to combat Ebola in Liberia, that would be a good thing to do. And I'm going to be going back to Liberia in September. I'm going back to help in my own weak ways, to help the Ministry of Health to create awareness, to see how we all can combat Ebola. It was so good having me. It was wonderful. I'm excited and interested about the way everything went.
Well, Harriet Dolo, we wish you and your family well. My thanks to you for coming on Health Styles today, and to Dr. Madeline Agard and Dr. Dorcas Kunkel, three fine nurses who are trying to help Liberia to ensure that it has a future with a strong healthcare workforce and healthcare delivery system that's certainly under challenge right now because of Ebola. So thank you all for joining me on Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. You can follow us online by going to www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. You've been listening to Health Styles on WBAI 99.5 FM New York.